Okay, so we're back, and we're at the last session of the day now.
Yeah. Thanks for hanging with us, everybody out there who's still hanging with us.
That's true. There is a good chunk of you out there, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, as interactive as the entire day was, we're going to continue that interaction. You notice we now have another computer up here. Yeah. We are monitoring your questions. And what I thought we would do in this particular session, now, of course, see, he's typing these things, but you're forgetting that from what you hear me say to what they hear me say.
It's about a 10 or 15 second delay.
Is that what you just wrote?
No.
Oh, no, okay.
No, no. I just said, told them to chat away. Hold on.
Okay, we're going to try to stay on topic. See, this is the problem when you put Bruce and I together. We may or may not actually stay on topic. Anyway, control yourself.
I am. All right. Good now.
Okay, so what I thought we would do in this session is basically we've gone through all the various different types. We've gone through cloud services, virtual machines, websites. Bruce just went into the combination of the two together. So you're probably sitting there kind of like scratching your head kind of.
What the heck am I going to do now?
Yeah, so it's like, where do I start? What goes where and how and why? And the good news is that as with everything in software development, software architecture, infrastructure architecture, the answer to every one of your question is it depends.
Yes. I call that consultant's answer.
Pretty much.
It is.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I'm happy to give you an answer. It just depends.
And but the truth is that the reason why we say it depends in this particular case is because it actually depends on what you're trying to build.
We're not lying.
There's
it really does depend.
Yes, ideally we're not lying.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if we recap, just in case for those that came in a little bit late or if...
Went to get coffee.
Went to get coffee, forgot to come back. Anyway, so the three, talk about virtual machines, that's your capability to bring in Windows servers, Linux servers into play, and actually just as Bruce was mentioning in the last one, little kind of like either build in the cloud or forklift from your on-premise and move it over. Cloud services, we're talking about actually wrapping your code or your solution in effectively... XML, I guess you can say, that actually describes the infrastructure that you need.
That's exactly what it is. Yep.
Right? But the idea being is that you're at that point where you've now sort of taken the infrastructure out of the picture because you don't actually care what the infrastructure
is. You don't.
Right? And you're getting to the point where you're actually almost like allowing Azure, in this case, to control these for you because, let's be honest, it could probably do a much better job than you and I sitting here in front of these can do.
Yeah, they have better people at it than...
Certainly. Fair enough, better people.
Maybe not you, but me.
What he's not telling you is that it's actually all automated.
Yeah.
So when he says people,
I mean,
when he says people, it's the people who automated.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then last but not least, we have websites, which is like the complete other option where you just kind of start up and go, but of course you have no control at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was always kind of my big thing, because we actually are doing some website stuff.
Right.
And I can't remote into the machine.
There you go.
I can publish.
There you go.
There's my app. It's there. But I don't get to configure the machine at all. So.
You win some, you lose some, right?
Yep.
Anyway, by the way, while we're going on here, I want to see questions in there. We're going to get to them in just a second because I do finally see
there's
in there.
There's a question.
That's awesome. We're going to get to that in just a split second. You saw this in Tyler's session in terms of responsibilities, but I think that the easiest way to compare these things, and I'll give you a couple comparisons and then we'll bring on the questions, is to look at three different angles. So let's look at responsibilities first. You saw this, virtual machines, look at that. We get to deal with the applications, the data, the firewall rules, the virtual network, and the operating system. So granted, better than if we were doing it on-premise, because then we don't have to worry about the networking pieces to it, but still a whole bunch of stuff for you to take care of. Now, if your solution is that specific or that custom that you need that, well, then that's perfect for you.
And that, by the way, is the killer part. Need.
Versus want.
Versus want.
Yes. I'm not going to go on my rant about server huggers.
No, I understand that. But it is some people need it. Some people just feel more comfortable with it.
Right. And for those people that are more comfortable with it, that don't actually need it, I send them to the trust center. I'm like, look at it.
Yeah, I know.
It does a good job. I know.
Okay.
So then we're on to cloud services, and now... You still have the option of managing the virtual network and the firewall rules. You don't have to. You can keep it as it is. But now you've taken away yet another layer, which is actually managing the operating system. Perfect. And then websites, of course, you have zero access to everything other than your application and your data.
Yep.
Okay. So that's one comparison. Let's look at it from a scenarios perspective. When do you actually do all these things? virtual machines, let's think about it, easy way to think about it, enterprise applications.
Yes.
Right, like those big clunky systems that need multiple servers.
Yeah, where you don't have as much control over the individual pieces.
Right. For example, something like a CRM application might actually say, yeah, you know what, I can't go into a shared database server. No. I need an instance all on my own.
That's right.
And I need it to have this kind of reporting server, and I need it to have this kind of
A lot of specifics about what they need, and not really the ability to forklift it onto stuff that it wasn't expecting.
There you go.
Which is ultimately what the other ones are.
There you go. And if you have those, great.
Yeah.
Option number two
is
bringing over additional applications that at this point in time you don't feel like changing.
Correct.
Fair?
Absolutely, yes.
You can literally, that's your forklift that you were talking about before.
Right. Yeah, push it up there. Yeah, I've got an app running on a server. Push the app up to the server. You push the app up to the server, and it will just simply be as if it was running on your own server. So
right.
From that perspective, you don't have to do anything other than move it.
Now, not that this would ever happen, but if this happens to be an application that you, let's say, didn't have the source code for, it would never happen.
No,
right?
I'm sure nobody's like that. Other people are like that.
For sure. And then you want to just take it so that it continues running, because let's say you don't want to support it in your own data center.
Yes.
Okay, cool. And then, of course, naturally, since you don't have this option with cloud services and websites, if you need Linux,
it's there too.
Linux pretty much is actually your only option to go to virtual machines.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Unless, of course, you want to change it.
I'm not going to go there either.
Fine. I'm just saying, if you wanted to, you could change it over to a Windows server, and then you have cloud services open to you. But as long as you need Linux, okay.
Yeah.
Are these virtual machine related ones?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay, cool.
We're still talking about Workflow Manager.
Ooh. Here. All right. Okay. So now let's talk about cloud services. Actually, you know what? We're not. Let's go to websites first and come back to cloud services.
I agree.
Okay. Websites. Simple, modern apps. You saw Tyler doing it in Visual Studio. Yep. You know, your standard MVC type applications. Nothing overly complicated.
No. And I say that, you know something? It's not that they're not overly complicated. You can create incredibly sophisticated web applications.
Ah, complex and complicated, two different things.
Absolutely correct. Good point. Uh-huh. Fine point, sir.
I win. All right. Anyway, so non-complex applications that can do really complicated things.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
And this is, by the way, the part where websites, the name, and I'm not part of the product group, so I can't take credit for the name, but it does become a little bit, trying to find the right word, confusing, because you don't actually have to only run websites on Windows Azure websites.
No,
you can run
true.
APIs.
I can run a WCF data service. I can run an endpoint.
As long as
it's something I can push. Basically, if I can put it into a web application or a
website, done.
That's all I need to be able to do, and then I can. That's again. this means install.
And it's actually really good too for taking those and then adding the continuous deployment onto that, because again, your current systems are probably already set up for the type of deployment methods that websites have, right? So if let's say you're using TFS, okay, well, no problem there. If you're using some other build server that is
the obvious one.
No, fair enough. I was going with ones that are, let's say you've already automated to do one way or another.
Yes.
And let's say you're FTPing.
Yeah, no,
you don't have to change all of that.
No, you're absolutely right. You can FTP up to these things. You've got a number of deployment mechanisms to get the stuff up there. But they're websites and web applications. I mean, that's what they are. It's that easy.
And then the kicker, too, this one is, at least to me, sort of a no-brainer slash an open kind of concept. That's funny that I say that, only because I'm about to say, if you're doing open source apps, okay, websites is by far the easiest route to go for two reasons. One, you can either get them out of the gallery.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
and especially, and they're constantly adding new open source platforms into the gallery that you could just, you saw it in Tyler's session, click.
Yeah, I know.
Done.
We put up a WordPress blog and, I don't know, it took about 45 seconds.
Get this.
I think I was slow.
When I moved my blog over, shameless plug, jrosenblood.ca, shameless or shameful, doesn't matter.
Okay.
Anyway, when I moved it actually took longer to find my FTP settings than it did to provision and configure the entire thing.
It's just amazing how quick that stuff is.
And then I moved all the content over in about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And boom, I was up and running. Okay, so lesson there, open source, other than the fact that Azure loves open source. Open source, websites, perfect match, made in heaven, makes things easy that way.
Yep.
Okay, that, those were scenarios. Now let's look at specific features. Now, hopefully this is gonna build properly because it took me an excessive amount of time to build this, okay? Here we go. First feature, classic or support for ASP.NET, classic ASP, Node.js, and PHP. Both supported on websites and cloud server. Notice, by the way, I don't have virtual machines on here, and there's a reason for that.
Because I can support any of those on virtual machines.
There you go.
It's a given.
There you go.
It's right.
Just making sure.
Yes. No.
Okay.
Right.
So really, because on a virtual machine, as Bruce said, you have full control, I don't really need to compare features.
So it would be basically what you're saying is it would be green all the way down for virtual machines.
And it would take up screen space. And
exactly.
There you go.
It wouldn't look pretty.
Okay. So ASP.NET, classic ASP. By the way, anybody actually still doing stuff in classic ASP?
I'm thinking.
Interestingly enough, I found a very, I don't want to mention the name here, but I found a very well-known application that's still using ASP.
Oh, yeah?
And I sat there and I'm like, no way. It must be some sort of rewriting. But whatever. Node.js. I'm not going to say which one it is. I'm just saying that I found one and I was mind-boggled. Next one. Oops. Other way. All those building blocks that I talked about in the first session, available to both. Nice and simple, right? And why is that? Here we go. Were you paying attention to me?
No.
Of course not. REST-based services.
Oh,
people.
Yes.
Okay, everything in terms of...
REST is my friend.
There you go. Caching, well, I mean, talking to the cache is a REST-based service. So there you go. Service bus is a REST-based service. Storage is a REST-based service. You could even technically get into your database as a REST-based service.
Yes.
Okay. Point being, it's actually external to both websites and cloud services, so whichever one you go to, you can use it regardless, and you don't feel like
Makes
you're
sense.
Missing out. Okay, next, content configuration. Now, this one is the first one that we have a red on, because websites has this where you can share it across, and you can actually get it from the portal and all these things.
Yep.
Cloud services, you can't because, well,
you can't.
You sort of control that environment, and, well, you can't just go from a template.
No, that's you're absolutely right.
Right, and that's actually why you have it in your solution in Visual Studio. You're actually building, say I want a web role and a worker role, you're actually building it right in there. Now Visual Studio does a great job of showing it to you in nice pretty screens, but at the end of the day, if you open that CSDEF file, all it's doing is writing XML for you. Okay, next up, deployment with Git and FTP. Only websites has that ability.
Yes, also true.
Ah, and that's, of course, where we get into, you know, that beautiful integration with open source and Git, and it doesn't have to be open source, but that works quite well. You saw in, I don't remember, did we see it in Tyler's session? We may have. Either way, it's literally just a couple of buttons, and it pushes it up to Git. Git makes it active.
Yep.
Done.
And
and you can even roll back.
Yes. Yes, you can.
That one's cool, too.
Yeah, I know. I've said the integration with Git is quite sweet.
Yes. Now, you can do rollbacks with FTP, by the way. Okay, and then you can't do this stuff with cloud services because, again, a cloud service needs a little bit more information than that.
It needs structure. It needs the XML file that says do all of this other stuff.
Yeah,
it's not quite a simple push.
Right.
It's not.
Okay, so we can't really see you guys, but we're hoping that you guys are kind of like doing the same thing while we're doing that. Okay, instant deployment. I love this one, too. And by the way, the reason why it says near instant deployment is because even though... and you saw in Tyler's session, like, he pressed F5. By the time he pressed F5, he saw the Hello Cloud. Technically, there was a little... I wasn't counting how many milliseconds, but there was a little bit of delay between the time that he FTP'd it up to when it showed up in the browser.
Yeah.
Having said that, reason why you don't have that on a cloud services side is because every time you deploy a cloud service, you're actually provisioning hardware, virtual hardware in this case.
Yes, VMs.
VMs
of some kind or another.
Right. So... yes, the deployment is going to be nice and quick, but when you have to, you effectively have to wait there for it to spin up the virtual machines that you've defined in your XML. They have to load up. They have to get your source code. They have to be connected into the network load balancer, so on and so forth. Website side,
it's
all done for you.
It's minutes, not milliseconds.
Right, and by the way, since I usually get the question, the average time that they strive for is about 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen deployments go from a minute. I've also seen deployments go... into an hour, depending on, like, if you're spinning up 250 instances.
It takes a bit longer.
Still, a shorter amount of time than if you were to do it yourself.
And then if I was to unpack, in other words, basically by the time I've unpacked the machine from the box,
right,
it should be up.
Right, let alone find the CDs wires or the USBs.
Yeah, exactly. Crawl again. Around the floor again.
Moving on. Integrated MySQL as a service. Now, we talked about this, and actually in the chat too, Paul, by the way, thanks, Paul, for all your comments. Paul was talking about how the MySQL support from our partner, ClearDB, was actually quite fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's true. Now, I have green on both of these, but Cloud Services has a little bit of an asterisk there, only because the provisioning of a MySQL database is not actually available in the management portal for Cloud right. Services. But for websites, it provisions it automatically.
Right. Yes.
How do we get around this? You provision a dummy website, you have the database, take the information, put it in your Cloud
yeah.
Services app,
and then you're off it. You go.
Okay. I'm assuming eventually they'll put it in the portal, but today it's
just
not there.
Not there yet. Yeah. Not okay. Everything's in the portal yet.
Keep in mind, it is still a preview portal. So
I understand that.
And actually, just last week, they added a whole bunch of functionality that wasn't even there before. It makes my life so much easier now because you don't have to flip back and forth. Multiple deployment environments. Tyler talked about this one also.
Yes.
Staging and production.
Yes.
Websites.
Not so
big
much.
No.
No.
That doesn't exist.
Well, this is what you pay for getting near instant deployment.
There you
it's
go.
It's nearly instant deployment.
But the thing is, too, with websites, here's the way I look at it. If you're in website mode,
yep.
And you're thinking that you need multiple deployments, you've probably graduated past the relative simplicity of websites.
Yes. Or I'll put it to you this way. If that's really what you want to do, you create a second website.
True. But
I mean, it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing as a pure production. It's not the same thing as a staging and production. I can't migrate from production to staging. There's a lot of stuff I can't do.
Like, by the way, that's if you've right. never tried this, swap VIP.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Thing. Yeah. No, there's so it wouldn't be an ideal scenario, but I can certainly test out my deployment without bringing down a production environment.
Right.
But you're right. The website functionality isn't aimed at this because you're complex versus complicated.
Right.
It's not aimed at a sophisticated environment. It's aimed at a fairly straightforward environment. The more sophisticated you want, the more likely you're going to be looking at cloud services potentially or VMs.
Right.
As a more likely kind of deployment scenario.
Makes sense. Next one, network isolation. Same thing.
Yes.
Same thing. You're in a website world. If you're worried about network isolation,
it's,
probably is not for you.
It's not a place to be, no.
Right. Cloud exactly. services, out of the box, naturally in that when you deploy a cloud service-based solution, each one of your virtual machines that you've spun up as part of that is its own being.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Now, you can set up so that they can see each other.
Yes.
But virtual machines outside of
don't
your
get to go in and see
cloud
you.
Service don't get to see you.
That's right.
Right. Okay, moving on. Remote desktop, this is what you were
yes,
talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. I don't get to be able to remote into my website.
Which, again, if you think about it.
I shouldn't have to.
Right. Now, technically, you might say, okay, well, what if I need diagnostics, so on and so
they
forth?
Actually, they have diagnostics logs hanging off the website.
You there
can
you
click
go.
To them. The diagnostic logs are actually quite decent.
Right.
I give them credit
And
for
in
that.
Fact, you can even actually write to those diagnostic logs. I don't know if you knew that.
I absolutely could, not to mention the fact that I could pull down my logs from my website and I could run them through any log analyzer that I want because those are the kind of logs that are there as well.
True. Yeah. And it can send up metrics into the portal, too.
That one I haven't tried yet.
Yeah, that one's really cool. So the point being, you have all of these other options that if you actually need to remote desktop into the servers.
Yes, it's not really for diagnostic purposes. It's you kind of, what do you actually, why do you think you need to?
Right. Here's the other caveat to that one though. Remote desktop is available for cloud services. However, think about it this way. Okay, as we know, we heard earlier, cloud services, basically the idea is that it repeats the same thing on all these servers. Now, once the servers are up and running, technically it's all the same unless you start touching it.
Yes, like now, by remote accessing into it?
There you go. When you remote access into a cloud service VM, you're basically going into the one machine.
Yes.
You make a change on the one machine,
yes.
It's not getting replicated to that X many you have.
No.
Okay. More importantly, cloud services are stateless. So whatever change you make, unless you've scripted it,
When
it's not coming back.
That's right. You spin one down. You start off with 10. You move them up to 20. You have to do those.
Right.
Bring them down to 5. Move up to 10. Those last 5 don't have them.
Exactly. Or more importantly, if for whatever reason something broke.
Think of the debugging you'd have.
Fair enough. But if something broke and then Windows Azure had to go provision you a new instance,
It's
not there, right?
It's not there either. No, exactly. Yeah. So
now, if you want to tweak server settings. You could do that. Tyler was talking about startup tasks. So it's absolutely doable.
Yes.
Point is,
you don't want a remote in to do it.
Right. Okay.
You go back to what you said, right? There's not people behind this. This is all automated.
Right.
Do what you need to do in an automated fashion. You'll solve yourself a ton of grief.
There you go. Okay, next up. Ability to run programs with elevated features or elevated permissions. Again, same concept.
Yes.
You probably don't want to be... First, two reasons for this one. A, you probably don't want to be doing that in a shared environment.
No, no.
Right?
That's correct.
In fact, we would be probably crazy to let you do that in a shared environment.
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. And then number two, if you're building something that, again, needs those elevated permissions, not wants, but needs,
yes,
you probably actually would feel more comfortable for you if you were in your own environment.
Yes, I know. And I'm having personal issues with that on websites right now because I have a need. It's not even a
need
want.
Or want.
It's actually a need to take an SVG file
right.
and produce a ping.
Okay, which, if we go back to definition of a website,
yes.
Now you've technically demonstrated the fact that you've gone over the scope of a complex but not complicated.
I want to send to an endpoint. Here's an SVG file. Give me back a ping.
Not saying it's not doable.
But actually, the problem you run into is a lot of the tools to do it are like command line tools.
Thank you.
Inkscape is a command line tool, and it's kind of like, okay, I really don't think I'm going to be able to do this by running this as a... Yeah. So,
right.
And now you're absolutely right. I'm kind of at that boundary between... This was simple versus this is complicated. Not complicated, complex.
Now, I'm going to take a pause for a second, and hopefully you're picking up on the pattern here that it's not actually so much the features or the technical features that either cloud services or websites has that will be your deciding factor.
Right.
It's more of how do you need to interact with your application,
yes.
both from a management perspective, but also because that... At the end of the day, let's assume your application is in .NET. At the end of the day, both will ultimately run your application.
Yes.
The better question is how.
Yes.
And I think that's ultimately your deciding
right.
factor.
Right.
Whereas usually you would kind of, let's say you were trying to pick and choose a traditional hosting option. And you would look at, well, does it give me enough disk space? Does it give me enough bandwidth? All of that is not...
That's not really an issue anymore.
Not an issue in this world. It's actually, what do you actually need for your application?
That's right. What functionality do you need?
Yeah. More so than just your disk space.
That's, yes. Well, because disk space here, even here, even you're paying for it, it's cheap.
Yeah, I mean, I think last I checked it was, what, 12 and a half cents per gig per month.
Yeah, I can live
and
with that.
And that changes all the time, too, for the better, by the way.
Yes.
It does not go up, or it has yet to go up.
Yeah, well, it's also only about, 3 months old, give it time.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Now, startup tasks. That's the one I was just talking about
yes.
before. Again, you could do stuff like that on cloud services because it's your own environment. Websites, not so much.
And I'm going to just kind of back that one up a second because I know it depends on the kind of startup tasks you're doing. I have application start. I have access to the same things I do if I was doing this in IIS.
Right.
I don't have the ability to script out something that would change IIS.
There you go.
As my application launches. So that's kind of my,
Yeah, I guess.
I don't have admin. I can't do startup admin tasks on a website.
So I think if to paraphrase what you're saying,
yes.
I think what you're saying is that for this particular one,
yes.
startup tasks is more, think about it in terms of admin tasks, like
yes.
you said, versus
yes.
startup tasks of what you need to get done when your application first starts.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Because that you have in both worlds anyway. It doesn't matter. Okay. Ability to use unsupported frameworks or libraries. Now, I love it when this one comes up because the word unsupported throws people off.
Yes.
Okay, let me clarify. Remember in the first session I was talking about the fact that .NET, Java, PHP, Python, Node.js are the supported platforms on Windows Azure. Fine. Now, it gets a little bit more complicated. What happens if, and we had this question in the chat, what happens if you need .NET 4.5? Well, right now, only 4.0 is actually supported.
As of this moment, yes.
Right. That's not to say that technically it's not possible to run 4.5. It's just what is supported and what is not.
I don't think we're doing that.
Just saying, in the website world, you can't modify that whatsoever.
No.
You use what you have. Cloud services, you can always install whatever you need. Again, understanding that should there be a problem, whatever is not in the list of supported platforms is technically unsupported. Not that it won't work, but that if you put a ticket in for support,
they can't help you.
I'm
sorry, we have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. I've seen people install, what was that framework? It was some some variant of C++ of some sort. Anyway, point is, you as long as it runs on a Windows box, it will run here. The question is whether you will get support for it or not.
Right.
Okay. Last but not least, you talked about this one in your session.
Yes.
Support for that virtual networking capability.
Yes.
Okay. Websites, again, if you need to connect into an on-premises database, let's say, chances are you probably need more than a website anyway. Or if you actually just need that connectivity, well, then by default, you're in the cloud services world.
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's look at these questions. What do we have here?
Okay. So we're going to...
Let's set up some good ones.
We're going to back this up just a second. So the first question was, any idea when 4.5 will be available?
Interestingly enough... don't have an exact date, but as Tyler mentioned in his session, they actually, the Windows Azure team just sent out a newsletter, I think it was at most a week ago, saying, by the way, we're just finishing up testing,
it's coming soon. Yeah, exactly, it's going to be out shortly.
I saw that. I was kind of looking at that email, I'm like,
why are you telling me it's just about to be here? Yeah. Oh, by the way, it's almost here. Thanks for the anticipation.
How about this? When, in fact, the support is there, if you are the Twitter type, then follow CDN Azure on Twitter. I will let you know. If you are the LinkedIn type, Canadian Developer Connection, I will let you know. So 4.5 is coming. It's just not there right
now. Okay, so now we're going to go back to the first question.
Let's do it.
Okay, so this is from Darian. I am trying out the Workflow Manager 1.0.
Uh-huh.
Could you recommend a resource to take a look at workflow hosting capabilities in Azure?
As per the usual, your best bet is usually MSDN. Though personally, I haven't tried to look for detailed resources on workflow. I know there's a whole bunch of stuff on there.
Yeah.
But if there isn't what you're looking for there, send me an email or a tweet or whatever it is, and I'll help you find what you're looking for. Because it is actually relatively new.
Yeah, it is. And what you're doing, because he's installing it on a Windows 2008 VM. There's a lot of stuff to configure.
Of course.
And realize the thing is, there isn't anything in Azure. It'd be really nice if there was a gallery image for,
Well, maybe one day there will be.
Maybe one day there will be. But at the moment, there's not. So because you're working with the VM, you have to treat it like it was, I'm working with this thing sitting at home, and I'm going to install it. So all the same configuration steps are going to apply whether you're doing this on-prem or whether you're doing this in the cloud.
All I know is that I heard that it's supposed to get easier. What that actually means, not quite sure. But
easier.
I know that there's definitely talk about it.
Manager easier?
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just saying.
I know.
Okay, what's next?
Well, Paul suggested there was actually a resource to talk about the scenario decisions. It's www.tothecloudguide.com.
That's
I'd click on it, but I'm afraid that it might not be safe. I'm kidding.
That's actually, I didn't even know about that one particular one.
Let's see.
There's also actually one of the Windows Azure MVPs out of the States, David Pallman, has a book too, but he also has, on his site, he has a whole bunch of blog posts on that. I'll flash the link a little bit later because I don't have it with me right now, but David Pallman is the name that you're looking for. A whole bunch of stuff on there.
Okay.
On that.
And then the last one that we haven't already talked about, and actually Tyler's been kind of working to answer it online, I missed the multiple deployment environment, production versus staging. Can someone explain that?
Ah, okay. Let's go back to that one. So in the cloud services world, you effectively have, as you said there, multiple deployment environments. Basically what that means is that after you deploy your application, now, when you deploy your application, you have a choice. You can either deploy directly into production, which...
Do I need to say that's a bad idea? I test in production as well.
Yeah. Do I need to tell you that that's a bad idea? But ultimately, you also have the option to deploy to staging, which is effectively what Windows Azure does, is it makes a copy of what your production environment would look like. And instead of using that DNS name that you effectively asked for when you set up that cloud service, it's going to give you this gigantic GUID.cloudapp.net and basically allow you to access the application as if it was production. Now, if you don't have anything already deployed to production, it makes it very simple. In the management portal, you have this nice little button that says swap VIP. And what that does is it takes whatever's in staging and then just moves it over to production. Now,
moves over is kind of an interesting way of putting it.
It's
not really
that.
Moving over.
No, and that's actually the beauty of it. I don't know about you, but when I used to deploy applications, and you always deploy applications at night, which is the worst possible time for you as a deployer.
Yes.
Anyway, we used to deploy to the staging environment, test it out, say, yep, application is good.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we would repeat the deployment.
Exactly.
Into production.
Repeat the test.
Repeat the test. Now, there's no guarantee, because technically there's no guarantee that is whatever you do, whatever you try to do, there's no guarantee that those two environments are the exact same.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
They're supposed to be, I swear.
They're supposed to be. And you follow the deployment document, and something always goes wrong. So in this world, and that's why Bruce was laughing about the move, because it's not actually moving. Move. Basically, what the network balancer does is it redirects what would be your production URL, your DNS name, to that staging environment. That staging environment now became your production environment. No redeployment.
No.
Now, where it gets even more interesting is if you already have something in production. So let's consider version 1.0 in production. Now you're deploying, let's say, version 1.1. You want to test it.
Yep.
You're going to deploy it into staging. Now the nice thing is that you could deploy it into staging. You can test version 1.1. 1.0 is still in production.
Yes.
Your users have no clue.
No idea. Yep.
Okay. Now you do all your tests on 1.1. All is well. You're ready to cut over. Now again, no redeployment. Swap.
Yep.
Hold on.
Swap.
After you've deployed, you swap. Okay, I don't know if I should have him back on other workshops.
No.
Anyway, hopefully you guys are finding this entertaining, because it's certainly entertaining here.
I'm all about me.
Okay, back to staging. All right, so you do the swap, and now your 1.1, the next call that whoever user makes, that next call is going now to your new application. Now, what does it do with version 1.0? Swap means swap, so it's now in your staging environment, right?
Yep.
Does that answer the question?
I think so. He was actually quite happy with the answer that Tyler gave, so I didn't know that until we got started.
Fair. Well, ideally, then my answer was the same
sure
as Tyler's.
I'm sure your answer was wonderful. I don't think it was not. Okay, so any news / rumors, because I know you always talk about rumors, on BizTalk as an Azure service?
You know, interestingly enough, I don't know about as a service, but BizSpark actually showed up in the gallery as a virtual machine.
BizTalk.
Yeah, what did I say?
Spark.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
That was a subtle
Subtle hint. Yeah, no, BizTalk is actually out there as a virtual machine, and it's been out there for, I want to say, probably about 6 or 8 weeks now.
Something like that.
It's been out there for a while. So they do add stuff to the gallery on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything at all about BizTalk as an Azure service.
Not that I know.
Nothing, no.
And put it this way, even if there was talk and it wasn't on the Windows Azure team blog, then I certainly would know about it anyway.
No, and even if he knew, he couldn't tell you, or he'd have to kill you.
Bruce
and
does
it's
this
really
to me.
Hard to do that virtually.
Bruce does this to me all the time. He's like, I know you probably can't answer this question. Then he's like, wait, correction. I know you probably don't know the answer
to
this.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
But I'm going to ask you anyway. So thanks for asking anyway. And when I know, I will let you know for sure.
So somebody, Lal, was trying to access Azure. I'm assuming by this he means the Azure portal over Windows XP.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
So here's the deal. By the way, did you know Windows XP is heading out of support in April of 2014? So issue number one, Windows XP. Now, having said that, one of the reasons why it's not working is, in fact, because the new portal is HTML5 based. If you're running Windows XP, chances are you're probably running IE 6, 7, or 8.
Which is not really HTML5 friendly.
Which is not HTML5 friendly at all. So it will not work. So best recommendation to you is probably to upgrade or run Windows 7 in a virtual machine, or Windows 8 soon in a virtual machine on your Windows XP box.
On my Windows XP box, yeah. Right. Hold on. Can I actually run? Oh, yeah, VPC. Right.
You can run VPC.
I'm sorry, it's been a while. We've got two questions. We're going to go with the serious one first.
Ooh.
Is the BizTalk license price the same from that image on the gallery? If I'm not mistaken, and you please correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm not mistaken, if you're getting an image from the gallery, the licensing for that software on that image is included in the price for the image.
Now, that's true for server operating systems.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was true for BizTalk or not, to be fair.
I'd have to get back to you on that one.
I would have said, okay, so I'm going to, again, this is my non-Microsoft answer. Right,
underline.
Well, because I don't want to. I don't want to put you on the spot for saying this. Right.
Okay.
The SQL Server that's out there happens to be an eval version.
Correct.
It's an eval version of Enterprise.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know, and I wouldn't surprise me if maybe there's some licensing costs that'll be there at some point when that stops being an eval version. The BizTalk that's out there isn't listed as being an eval version. on that basis, I would suggest that maybe the licensing price is included. But again, that's a...
Probably best to send me an email about that one, only because I don't pretend to be a licensing specialist. In fact, I don't want to be a licensing specialist.
Yeah, you don't. There's a course for that.
There's a certification
for
that.
Yes, I know, and I've
But bottom line is that with the way that it works, at least on the server operating systems, is that anything you provision from the gallery, let's say Windows Server 2012 or Windows Server 2008, the license, if you provision it from the gallery, is technically included with your monthly price, or I should say your hourly price for that virtual machine.
So Tyler's suggesting, by the way, that it's actually a CTP version of
it
BizTalk.
It is, you're right.
So it's preview-based licensing.
So there you go.
Okay.
Going back to operating systems, if you are bringing your own VHD, like Bruce was talking about in his session, that's your license.
Yeah, exactly.
So you'd actually
you
bring the VHD with your license.
Well, it's in exactly the same thing as you would if you're running it on Hyper-V.
Right.
You need a license for it to
run.
It doesn't matter where you're running it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's still an operating system at the end of the day.
Okay. And is the BizTalk Image 2010 R2 with Azure Service Bus? That I don't know the answer to that off. I have no idea.
Okay. So what's the lesson to us? Learn a little bit more about BizTalk.
Actually, in this particular case, I think the lesson would be to, if there was just a little bit more width in that gallery. Because, you know, if you actually take a look and pull it down, it's not quite all there. And if you hover over it, there's no tooltip. It's about the design. This is what I'm telling you.
Absolutely. Blame it on the design. Not pilot error.
It's not me. No. And the last, there is a request here for us to dance. See, it says right there, you guys will end up, I'm kidding.
I don't know. I know. I see it there. I just don't know about doing that on air. Maybe if the...
I'd say I have dignity, but I really don't.
No, how about this? We'll do it,
but
if the feed happens to cut out...
Too bad for everybody else.
Right, but us here in the studio and our wonderful production team here, we'll see us dancing.
And it'll be on the end of the Channel 9 version.
Okay, let's get back to comparing, shall we? Okay, I got one more on here, and this is actually, by the way, from David Pallman's site. So if you zoom in on the bottom there, you can actually see the URL, but I'll make sure to add that onto the video when we post it on demand. But basically, if we just do one last comparison and we kind of look at all of the different things that we went through.
Yes.
When we're talking about, by the way, that WAWS, Windows Azure website, websites. Yeah.
Was.
I don't know. Like, that's why
I
don't talk in acronyms.
Yes,
so I confusing.
Yeah.
Or Windows Azure Mobile Services, WAMS.
Yeah. Pause, which is actually my dog.
You go. Okay. So have a look at that chart on your screen. And the point there being, I'm going to highlight a couple. Portability. Okay. If we look at websites, fully portable. Reason being, again, you're not configuring anything specific to the Azure environment.
I can deploy just as easily to an IIS machine running on my prem as I could running it out on the cloud.
Now, interestingly enough that you say that, because if you did want to do that, because you can do that, it's almost recommended that you should. If you need, like, let's say, for example, you're okay running your own data center for a while or your own server or whatever, and you don't need the elasticity of Azure, for example. Run it there, and then eventually, if you need to scale out, you scale out into Windows Azure, then you can scale out even more, and then when you don't need that, scale that down, and then scale it back to your other one.
Yes, absolutely.
There's absolutely nothing preventing you from doing that.
Nope, not at all.
Okay. Now, if we look at from the cloud services perspective, now this is a little bit tricky because at the end of the day, there is some configuration that you're doing that's specific to Windows Azure.
Yes.
I'm not going to deny that, and, you know, like, because I'm always afraid to say that, because you go from saying something is fully portable, or even a virtual machine that's fully portable.
Right.
And here I was the entire day saying strategically you should look at cloud services for your applications as the ultimate place to go. So the natural reaction I usually get is, well, aren't I locking myself into Azure? Here's my thing for you. Here's what I want you to think about. Let's make sure that.
Message.
Yeah, let's get rid of that, shall we? Good thing it wasn't on the screen, eh? Let's go back.
That was close. Yeah.
Okay. So, what I wanted to point out there is, at the end of the day, cloud services are still .NET applications. Okay. So that's number one.
Yeah.
So if you're not using any of the other application blocks, technically you can move it. It's a .NET application. Once you start using storage or you start using Even SQL or Windows Azure SQL databases, you can move over. There's nothing special there.
Yes.
Once you start using storage, once you start using cache, then things get a little bit complicated.
It's no longer portable.
It's not
I can't pick
forkliftable.
Up and bring it. Yeah, exactly. I don't have the ability to bring it in.
Right. Now, in theory, good development practices, you should decouple from everything anyway.
One of those?
So my point being is that if you actually have that layer where you're saying, let's say you have a data access layer, and your data access layer, as far as the application is concerned, does not care where it's connecting into,
right.
You can swap out providers as you need, and you're just as portable.
Yeah.
So yes, it's not forkliftable, but it does require to do a little bit more thinking in terms of your code.
You have to design for portability.
Okay, but bottom line, you're not locked in. Okay. Manageability, here's another crazy one. Fully managed on the website, fully managed on the cloud services, completely your problem on a virtual machine.
Completely your problem. I think that needs to be the new marketing tagline. Windows Azure Virtual Machines.
This is why I'm a developer and not in marketing.
Why I'm not working for Microsoft.
Now, when I say your problem, it's not to imply that there will be problems.
No, of
it's
course
that
not.
It's under your control.
It's your control. Okay. And actually, that's ultimately what happens.
That's what I probably should have said.
You're the one in control, so you're the one that's going to be responsible for fixing whatever problems might come up at
right.
that level.
And ultimately, you're the one responsible for having that knowledge in order to be able to manage.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, let's look at the provisioning time. Huge differences there, right? Website services, we saw Tyler doing it live, very simple, under a minute, it just happens. The cloud services, not so much, 10 to 15 minutes, or roughly an average of 6 minutes, depending on what your complexity is. Virtual machines, as you heard Bruce talking about, virtually the same thing anyway underneath the covers, so it'll take roughly the same time. Now, persistence. Okay, websites persist.
They do.
Simple.
Yep.
Cloud services do not persist.
No. Nope.
Virtual machines do persist.
Sort of.
They persist.
The data disk.
Bits
and pieces of them don't.
Fair enough.
That, yeah.
Fair enough. Caught me there. Yeah. Point was, if you missed Bruce's session from earlier.
Tough for you. No.
That's why
online.
We have things on demand.
It's online.
Okay.
Exactly.
And then last but not least, obviously it goes without saying that from an SLA perspective, since that's what I was talking about in the first session, websites and virtual machines currently are in preview mode. So there is no guarantee of the SLA. However, in the virtual machine world, because ultimately you're going to roll it up into a full-out virtual machine, and it is, in fact, underneath the covers a cloud service, then you'll have the three nines on a single instance. And then on the cloud services, if you have multiple instances, and obviously the more you have, the better, but two or more will actually give you, what is it? It's 9995.
Yes, which is,
There's
2 hours. It's like 2 hours a year.
There's a huge difference.
Oh, no, there is.
If you're actually concerned about availability, that's a huge difference.
It is a huge difference. No, it is. No question.
Okay, so bottom line, what I'm hoping that you got from this particular discussion is that when you're thinking about which way you're going to go, you want to think about how you need to access your application. And by you, I mean you as in the developer / admin, not you, the user of your application. You want to think about what kind of level of flexibility do you want to have?
Yes.
Or need to have?
Yes, it's more a need.
Need. Okay. And then last but not least, and this is something that we as developers don't necessarily think of usually, I'm going to throw in there, you want to think about the costs. Now, we didn't go into costs specifically today for a reason. The costs change, and they change often in a good way because the more this stuff is adopted, the cheaper things become, which is great. The best way to look at the differences in cost is you go to windowsazure.com. There is a fantastic calculator on there that will actually, you can move sliders back and forth and you can go through all the different scenarios. But if you're looking for that free option, Windows Azure websites, way to go.
Yes.
Right? In fact, they announced a couple weeks ago that there will be a free option, a shared option, and a reserved option. Windowsazure.com has all that information for you. Cloud services, virtual machines, there is no free option.
That's right.
Now, having said that, if you can start off in the website world, you could start off for free, effectively.
Exactly. Yes.
And grow into cloud services.
Yep.
Or you can go from websites to grow into virtual machines if you needed even more complexity. So that's one way. If you're migrating an application, you might come from the virtual machine route and then eventually go to cloud services.
Yeah.
Right?
I know. There's all the choices. There's choices, dude.
There's choices. There's choices. And usually choices stress people out. But I think in this particular case, what I love about this, and by all means, try going, if you want to go try and go cloud services first, there's nothing that says you can't do that or shouldn't do that. But if it worries you, here's my suggestion to you. Ooh, I just hit the microphone. Sorry about that. Start off with the easier option, okay? So websites or virtual machines, build up. Build up to a point where you're comfortable. When you get comfortable, you'll either stay where you are or you'll go to cloud services.
Right.
You don't have to choose up front unless you want to. And certainly if you kind of work with that mentality that you eventually want to get to cloud services, because ideally it is that optimized model, you could do the thinking up front, but again, you could start off with a simple website.
Right, and build up from there.
And build up from
there. That's the idea.
Okay, so the point is, here's the lesson for the day. Options are good. And I'm building up to a point.
I'm building up to a point.
Options are good because in this particular case, there is relatively little harm if you don't pick the right one
off the bat. Yes, your ability to go from one to the other is very, very much intact.
Right.
No question.
And I mean, you did that yourself. That was the example that you were saying.
That's exactly right. We take bits and pieces, we pick and choose, we go where it's appropriate. We would have gone virtual machines for our website. Until shared website.
There you go.
And so we didn't actually change anything with that decision. That was that simple.
And that's something that might actually continue to happen as more features are added onto the platform. You may decide that cloud services is the way to go for you today, but then maybe down the road a virtual machine, some feature is added in there that you cannot live without. Fork it out of cloud services, put it on a virtual machine, you're good to go.
Makes sense.
Okay, so let's do it.
Which has got to do with how do we calculate the price with different usage scenarios. And so I'm going to kind of my observation on this.
Yes,
one,
do right? it.
Because the pricing calculator, I think, the comment is that it's complicated. I don't know that it's necessarily complicated so much that I don't necessarily know the information that I need to come up with an accurate calculation.
Agreed.
Before I sign up for something.
Well,
so it's not, it's really easy. There's a slider. I can go from 1 to 10 websites or virtual machines or whatever,
true.
But I don't know, for instance, I don't know if I need to have a small or a large virtual machine. I don't know I don't know what my throughput, my bandwidth is going to be, and those all feed in to what the calculation costs happen to be. And so my ability to project I'm going to pretend I'm not management for a second. I need to be able to tell you, Mr. Manager, how much you're going to spend every month.
True.
How do I do that before I actually do it? And I think therein lies the real problem with the calculator.
Fair enough. It is true. The calculator sort of assumes that you have those metrics.
Yes.
And especially if you're migrating an existing application, you should have a relatively...
I should have a decent idea, yes.
Right.
No question.
If it's a brand new application, you're absolutely right. Yeah. So here's my answer. And this I've done thus far. It has yet to fail me. And by the way, who was this? Who was
this
asking?
Was
Darian?
Darian.
Okay,
yes.
So Darian, if you have MSDN, now I know I talked about MSDN before, not a marketing pitch, this is truth. If you have MSDN, use those benefits. One of the reasons why those benefits are there is actually to assume that you don't know. Use it for as long as you need to get those metrics, then you'll have your answer. Now, if you don't have MSDN, again, it used to be the trial. Was only 30 days. And the truth is you can't understand anything about your application in 30 days.
No.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. If you're going up the trial route, don't sign up day one. Okay. All of the development tools that you need for doing stuff with Windows Azure actually come with emulators. So you can emulate cloud services. You can emulate storage, and you can emulate SQL with SQL Express.
Yes.
Okay. Set up your development environment that way. When you're ready to do real testing, get your trial then, and then that way you have 3 months to gather those metrics. And right. and so that's why I'm saying don't use those 3 months in terms of you know, sign up today and build. By the way, you can. It's just if you are in fact worried about not getting these metrics, you can use those 90 days or maybe sign up today, use the first 30 days in terms of just helping you on get comfortable with the platform, and then the 60 days to do the real testing. And then that information is what you can feed into the calculator to ultimately get that final number. But you're absolutely right. The calculator sort of assumes that you have these metrics. If you have an existing app, you should probably know those. If it's a brand new app, obviously that would be very difficult to do.
Okay. That was it. Cool. Oh, by the way, there was one other thing.
What?
The dancing. Hold on. This is what he meant.
Deploy. Oh!
Swap.
Deploy. Swap. What would be scale out then?
That's not bad, actually.
And then scale down.
Okay, well. Yeah, I'm thinking there's some people who are actually into into sign language that are going to be actually coming for our heads shortly.
You know it's the end of the day when. Okay, with that, thank you very much for joining us all day long, all afternoon long.
Yes.
I've been here all day, but all afternoon long. Just a reminder, next week, same time, same, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, so I'm going to say same time, same Azure channel.
There you go. Yes.
We're going to be talking about building connected applications. What does that mean? It means taking everything that we learned today and saying, okay, well, great. We talked about websites. Now, how do we actually talk about devices, which is what I mentioned in that first session.
Right.
So we're going to do that next week. And then the week after that, we're going to be talking about actual migration strategies, how to pick my apps to migrate, so on and so forth. If you haven't already registered, make sure that you do so that you get all that information, reminders, so on and so forth. Last but not least, big, big reminder for both myself and Bruce and Tyler, who is joining us from his office in Winnipeg. Fill out your eval form.
Yes, please.
It is superbly important to us.
Yes, it is.
So that we actually know for Bruce that he knows what he's talking about.
I don't know.
For me, it's actually so that I know that these are actually valuable for you, that you're learning what you want to learn. And if there is something that you want to learn that we haven't covered, let me know also so that we can actually make sure we can get workshops for you on that.
I'm just afraid of getting voted off the island.
And last but not least, if actually, I know there's a question on there for this, but if you can, in the comments, tell me whether you like this format of, you know, kind of like a live virtual show and with questions as opposed to more of your traditional webcast. Let me know that too, because that's obviously valuable information for me. And you can win some cool stuff if you fill out your evals.
There you go.
So,
cool stuff.
Yeah, we're going to keep the chat open for a bit. If you have questions, you can keep posting them. If you happen to think of something afterwards, after we're done today, or if you are watching this on demand afterwards, best place to have those questions answered is on LinkedIn. Join us on the Canadian Developer Connection Group, which is basically linknode.in/CDN and capital D devs. But you'll have that on the screen momentarily anyway. Post your questions there. There will be several people who will be more than happy to answer that, myself, Bruce, Tyler included, and a whole bunch of other Canadian Azure experts. With that, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining.